in determining one's eligibility for medical assistance. The medical assistance program in the state of New York covers many, many services, including in and outpatient hospital, dental, lab, x-ray, physician, and many other services. We maintain and are proud to maintain a memorandum of understanding with the state DVA that assists us in improving the delivery of services to veterans. We are fortunate to have counselors at some of our local departments of social services to assist veterans when they come there to asking for help. And we also share information between the two state agencies with the goal of improving delivery of services. What I've hopefully provided you is an overview of the medical assistance program in the state of New York. My understanding of from the letter that we received is that there was some interest in looking at long-term care services, and Brian Ellsworth was unfortunately not able to join us, but Chris Rush has come in his place, and Chris is prepared to speak briefly on long-term care services.
Good afternoon. As Betty indicated, I'm pinch hitting for Brian Ellsworth, who is our director for the Bureau of Long-Term Care. As I'm sure many of you are well aware, Medicaid is as much by default as by design the major funding source for a range of long-term care services. The majority of these, or the dollars of these services, are directed to nursing homes. We have approximately 110,000 nursing home beds currently in New York State, with expenditures that are annually bumping up against the $4 billion threshold. But in addition to those nursing home beds, we have a major home care network in New York State that also receives extensive Medicaid funding. And in the area of long-term care, we have the program that is known as the Long-Term Home Health Care Program, sometimes known as the Nursing Home Without Walls Program, or also sometimes known as the Lombardi Program, after the Senator Lombardi, who was the originator of the program. And essentially, the Long-Term Home Health Care Program provides for persons who are Medicaid eligible and judged clinically eligible for nursing home care and a range of non-institutional services, nursing aid services, and a variety of what are called waivered services, services that are available only through this program under special waiver from the federal government. Such things as Meals on Wheels, social daycare, housing renovation that would allow, let's say, to have a bathroom door widened or grab bars put in a bathroom or a ramp built to allow wheelchair access. In addition to the long-term home health care program, another major home care program serving Medicaid recipients is the state's personal care program. The personal care program is for the most part managed by local departments of social services. The local social service districts contract with a number of vendors, more than 400 vendors on a statewide basis, to provide specifically assistance to persons needing assistance with what are referred to as activities of daily living, assistance with bathing, dressing, grooming, walking, and so on. That program currently serves approximately 80,000 people on an annual basis at a cost of just under $2 billion. In addition to the long-term home health care program and the personal care program, there is also the certified home health care program. These are agencies that are licensed or certified by the health department and are both eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement. For the most part, certified home health agencies provide short-term post-acute care. But in some areas of the state where there are not long-term home health care programs or where there is a short supply of personal care services, the certified home health agencies also take care of people on a long-term basis, people who have chronic disabilities. More recently, the a program that has just been initiated in the last it was begun about 3 years ago, but the only became operational last year, and that is the assisted living program. Essentially, this program makes available to persons who are living in adult homes, but who whose level of frailty would make them clinically admissible to a nursing home. This allows the adult home to bring in additional services, home health services, personal care services, at a fixed daily rate, depending on the extent of the person's level of frailty. This is a very brief overview of the types of services, the types of long-term care services that that Medicaid funds. As you are, I'm sure, well aware, the governor's recently presented budget is looking for major cuts in funding to some of these programs. In particular, is looking to package the financing for the home care services that I have just described into block grants that would be county specific, that would in fact turn much of the responsibility back to the counties for the arranging for and for rate setting and for determination of how these services would be delivered. I think I'll stop there and would be happy to try to answer any questions that you might have.
Rick?
I have a couple. First of all, it's Don Rush, is that correct?
Christopher Rush.
Christopher
Rush.
R-U-S-H. I have a couple of questions, if I may. In the opening statement, Ms. Rice, you mentioned that the DSS had determined that 17% of the 3 million individuals serviced by DSS are veterans. Their surviving spouses or dependents of veterans. Do you have it on your application form?
We only ask on our application form the kind of benefits that an individual is receiving. Without having the form in front of me, I'm not 100% sure if we have it for a veteran. I believe we do because we look at the individual and maximize
the various programs that then Don delineated for home health care, for the long-term care program, the personal care program, et cetera, many of which help an individual be independent and self-sustaining, autonomous as long as possible without going into a nursing home. Do you have any breakdown on percentages of numbers of people and what percentage of those folks are vets? Is that something that you potentially could provide us with, Don?
I guess I'd have to punt on that and to go back and determine if, in fact, if we had that data, it would have to be driven off of the initial application form. It's not part of the claiming, if you will. It's not part of the billing process where much of the data is drawn from. But if we do have it on the initial eligibility application form, I'm sure we could get you some general numbers on that.
We would appreciate it on a breakout by program, if that is at all possible. Numbers of persons in the program, numbers of persons whom you believe, have reason to believe, are veterans on a statewide basis, and if you could forward that to President DeMarco, that would be very, very helpful. The block grant program that you were talking about, if that in fact goes, to lump sum and block grants back to the counties, I assume. Am I correct in that?
The piece that Chris was talking about.
Right. What kind of an impact would that have on veterans who may not be served? That would be of significant interest to this body and to all of our member organizations. So if you could produce that information, we'd be very grateful, sir.
Gary?
Yeah, Ms. Rice, you mentioned in your opening statement that you have veterans that you refer people to, during, I guess, during intake?
Veterans counselors.
Now, are they trained counselors as far as in veterans benefits?
State Division of Veterans.
Okay, so you counselors. Do refer them to them?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
George?
Just a quick comment and question. You mentioned a certain percentage of veterans you appear to be aware of may be coming through your office. The reason you're getting these questions up here is what I have found as chairman of the advisory board in Westchester, Andy O'Rourke, is that many of the social service money that's going for individuals that need it also have equal amount of benefits that are not being acquired from the Veterans Administration. And in your own regard, and what we're all aware of the criticality of funding that's being drastically cut, I think everyone here would strongly recommend that you take a closer look at who's coming in, because if you have two people coming into social services and one has veterans benefits because of his wartime service or whatever, that's money you don't have to spend on him. That money you can get from the VA.
We do try. That's why we have the cooperative agreement with the State Veterans Affairs. We try to identify people and refer them to benefits that are otherwise available to them outside of our service delivery system. However, when it comes to Medicaid, we cannot require a person to go to the Veterans Administration.
No, but you can go the other route, and that's what I'm talking about. If knowing that they're a veteran and knowing they have PTSD or Agent Orange or whatever we've been talking about here all day, you yourselves can go to the VA, to Jesse Brown and Company, and get that money for them, or have the VA office do it. We have found that in Westchester, because we have found that there was a big hole in the budget that wasn't done. It's in the millions.
Thank you.
Just one last request, Ms. Rice, or for Mr. Rush. If you would forward us the standardized roll-up report on how you determined that there were 17% veterans and who fell not just in the programs here, but do you have such a report for DSS in general?
That's an estimate based on information that we backed into. I do not believe we identify veterans in our system. While we ask that question during the eligibility process,
right,
in our computer system, we do not capture field that takes it the next step that says Betty Rice is a veteran or Christopher Russell is a veteran. And so we backed into that 17% as our best estimate.
Would it be possible, though, to send us whatever you do have that might give us some indication, number one, and number two, copies of any of the intake forms, you know, your methodology? That would be very, very kind. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I apologize for having missed most of what you said, so forgive me if I'm being redundant. A short time ago, John Rowan, in his statement, indicated that what he believed and what the Vietnam veterans wanted and believed was necessary was a veterans health care system, as opposed to a health care system that veterans might use. I wonder if you would comment on that, and what I'm particularly looking at or interested in hearing about is if, from your experience or knowledge, do you have any reason to believe that healthcare needs for veterans and healthcare needs for aging veterans, long-term healthcare needs, are different in any fashion than those needs of the general population?
When we speak to the organization, the, I've heard suggested before and now again, this organization that you'd like to funnel all health care through for veterans. I have to say right now that we would need changes at the federal level in order for the state to embrace that concept. That may come to us with block grants, and should that come, I think that the department would be willing to examine the proposals that you have in conjunction with the Department of Health to see what might be doable.
That's really not the question I'm asking.
Okay.
The question I'm asking is, as a veteran in need of long-term health care, am I likely to be different than the somebody of my same age and ethnic background, if you will, who is not a veteran? Only because I was a veteran.
Well, I guess this is just a guess and a personal opinion. I think that in my limited experience, veterans are as individual and as different in their needs and in their personalities and in their those two things as anyone. I certainly think that there are that there are veterans that have specific long-term care needs that are service related, be it something like Agent Orange, be it psychological problems relating from combat service, any of a number of things. I guess it's hard to say that as a class that there are unique needs that are specific to veterans in the area of long-term care. I guess, as in most of these things, we see specific needs for groups that are diagnosis specific sometimes, whether it be psychiatric needs or whether it be needs related to a specific type of physical disorder. I guess I can't say that in my experience these have been unique in groups of veterans.
Thank you. Go ahead, Rick.
If I may just follow up on that, Mr. President. One of the problems, it seems, to me anyway, and I think it would seem to the organization I represent here, Vietnam Veterans of America, that if you do not track the persons by veteran status, mm-hmm. it would be very difficult to discern any patterns down the line. And let me just say that most things that veteran-ness would not necessarily show up in diagnoses. Most post-traumatic stress disorder goes undiagnosed one's entire life. And you can go and sit down with a group of World War II veterans and start to ask the right kinds of questions and pull out of those men and women the most extraordinary experiences that you'll find out that they've been having nightmares every night. And if you examine their adrenal gland, and today, now they're finally waking up to the physiological impact of PTSD, if you were able to do a brain scan on all those people, you would find that we are different, mm-hmm. We weren't different before we went into the military. We're high functioning in many cases and lead very active and productive roles within the society, but we are different. So my question, just to tag on that, is that you may want to give some thought to putting together that kind of tracking mechanism so that you would be able to determine whether or not there is in fact a difference to the perceived needs of the people who actually deliver the care to the individuals.
Ms. Rice, Mr. Rush, really the committee thanks both of you.
We
thank you. Mr. Don Brown, New York State Department of Health, Mr. Brown is the Associate Director. Welcome, sir.
Hi, I hope you had a cardiologist on top of the stairs and trip back. President DeMarco, ladies and gentlemen of the council, thank you for this opportunity to speak. I said ladies and gentlemen. First thing I said was ladies. I recognize the ladies first. I'd like to go back to the question you asked Mr. Rush, because whenever we design, well, I'll introduce myself first. It's Don Brown. I'm the Associate Director of Health Facilities Management within the New York State Department of Health. One thing in long-term care that we know is that veterans are, at this point, predominantly male. If you go into a typical nursing home, there are more women than men. If you go into a typical veterans home, there are more men than women. That's a design consideration for us. There are some other diagnostic indicators when we do demographic analysis prior to developing a veterans home. There are some diagnoses, nervous system diagnoses, that are somewhat more predominant among veterans than non-veterans. But the biggest difference is that they're male, which means they're bigger, more robust, they require different staffing, sometimes different furniture, equipment. It's a different approach to providing care. And that's something I think that people who are doing long-term residential care for veterans have to keep in mind. We do. I'm going to be very brief, because I think several people have already mentioned the Veterans Home Program. I'm responsible for the planning, design, and operation of the state veterans nursing homes operated by the State Department of Health. There are four state veterans nursing homes in the state. The oldest, the 242-bed facility, is at Oxford, New York, and I'm somewhat reluctant to do this, but I'm going to anyway. Since you're all doing, you're trying to look at central planning for veterans health care, the Oxford home was started as the Women's Relief Corps home. It was for the dependents, mostly the female dependents of Civil War veterans. And the reason it was sited at Oxford was that after a song called, I think, What Will Poor Mary Do, the state legislature authorized a few hundred dollars to establish the home. So they got together a group of planners in Albany. They said, where will we put this in New York State? They said, well, the canal and the railroad intersect at Oxford, New York. So that's going to be the next center of commerce for the state. We'll put it there. Now if you go to Oxford, New York, you'll note that it is not the center of commerce. It's lovely. It's a lovely rural pasture environment. But it's not the center of commerce, because a few years later, somebody came along and had the bad taste to invent the automobile and four-lane superhighway after that. And Syracuse actually became the commerce center. It might have been a bigger commerce center at the time, but it grew even bigger. And Oxford got left out. So I caution you on doing macro state planning from Albany. We try to keep that in mind too. Whenever I tell this story to the designers of our veterans homes, whenever we begin a new one, we have to be careful thinking we know exactly what's going to happen 10, 15, 20, 50 years down the line. We recently built the 250-bed home at St. Albans, of which 235 beds are open. We are hoping to open the 15-bed ventilator unit this year, or within a year. That's in Queens. The newest 126-bed facility at Batavia, New York, is about 60% full. We just opened it in the fall, late fall, and we're filling it up as fast as we can. We have a waiting list. We also were involved in the planning and design of the 350-bed facility in Long Island on the campus of SUNY at Stony Brook. That is operated by the State University Health Sciences Center at Stony Brook. We also are designing, consistent with long-standing policy, new veterans homes can be considered if the following conditions are met. There's an unmet need for long-term care beds in the area. The home would be financially feasible. The Federal Department of Veterans Affairs makes a commitment to maintain or increase its share of the provision of long-term care in the area. This means that the state will not build and operate beds simply to permit the federal government to reduce the number it operates. In recent years, that hasn't been an issue. Another condition is that federal funding be available, and the final condition is that state matching funds are available. Based on these criteria, a 252-bed home in Montrose, New York, which was mentioned earlier, is in design phase. The phase of design it's in now is called design development, which means that the schematic plans are done. We have an idea what the building will look like in rough outline, and the details are being sketched in. Our homes operate as a network, the three that are operated by the department and the fourth when it comes in into full operation at Montrose. And that means that, for instance, we've found a way to economize by doing centralized billing. There's one billing office, it's located at Oxford, it does billing for all the homes with several fewer staff than if we had a billing office at each facility. We have a central computer system, it's decentralized, each home has its own local area network, but it can be accessed from any of the other homes for backup, for file maintenance, and many other things. I think most of you know something about each of the veterans' homes. I could speak, if you wanted, about each veteran's home, the services it provides, but I don't want to take up time from other speakers. Okay, I thought most of you knew most about most things about most of the homes. So the one other thing I'd like to mention is a thing called the Eden concept, and that's something we're moving toward at the homes. The Eden concept is a concept that was kind of invented by a physician in the southern tier of New York, and the idea is that people, when they go into a nursing home, are cut off from those things that were parts of their lives when they weren't in a nursing home. Kids, plants, animals, the outdoors. The Eden concept is to help bring that back. And so facilities that have been Edenized have animals in the facility, cats, dogs, birds, plants. They have intergenerational contact. Kids come in and play with the adults. They do things together. Sometimes the residents of the home tutor kids that are in school. Sometimes kids come in and maybe work in the library, do other things in the facility. The preliminary results from this are that, surprisingly, even though you'd think with a lot of kids going through a population of frail elderly people, there'd be more infections, mortality goes down, infection rate goes down, longevity goes up, and satisfaction of the residents go up. This is something that we're moving toward. It's not something that you can just install overnight, but it's a concept that we've been working on for a couple of years, and it's part of the design philosophy of our future facilities. So, are there any questions?
Yes, I have one.
Go ahead.
Why the Department of Health looks after three and not all four that are already open? Why not Stony Brook?
That was a legislative decision. There was a bill to bring Stony Brook into the health department. That bill did not pass.
I know the answer, but I want it to be publicly known.
Yeah.
Gary has a question.
I think you should go here. My colleague on the far right and I have been waiting to get somebody like you here to ask this question to. And every time we have a visitor to our regular meeting, we bring it up. The issue of hiring veterans, only veterans, to work in the long-term facilities. Do you have any decision-making on that?
We are under the rules of the state civil service system, which provides preference for veterans, but as you know, doesn't require that you be a veteran to get a state job. We have no options to go, if there's a list for a position, a nurse, we have to take the people that are on that list. We hire from that list. It's just, as it stands, since we are state facilities, obliged to use the state civil service system. Further, most staff in nursing homes are female. That's not just our nursing homes, that's nursing homes nationwide. And the reason seems to be that LPNs, nurses' aides, nurses, and many of the dietitians, dietary aides, tend to be professions which have historically been predominantly female. Although there are female veterans, there might not be enough female veterans holding the credentials required for nurse, supervising nurse, occupational therapist, whatever, to fully staff a veterans home network.
Do you make any effort to work with Department of Labor to hire veterans or identify veterans that are coming out of service to work here?
Not as such. We, again, use the state civil service system as it exists.
Thank you.
Sure. Identify yourself first.
My name is Jason McLean, here representing Senator Guy Malala's office. Obviously, the Veterans Home at Montrose was a major toll for him last year. My question is, do we have any updated figures on the federal grant for the facility? Does anybody have any updated figures on where that stands at this point?
Give me an hour. My boss, Gordon Hennessy, the Director of Health Facilities Management, is on a plane back from Washington now, trying to get some more information.
I'll answer that partially. There are money for three. There are seven proposed across the country, and we are not, from what I understand, one of the three at the moment. It's up to the budget. If the budget concludes the seven, Montrose will be in that seven.
I believe we're alone. I thought we were 11.
I heard seven. But
as of yesterday, in the Wall Street Journal and the Times, we had moved up from 14 all the way to fifth. And the last word I have from Washington is that we're fifth. And as he has said, that the fundings for the first three has been set.
Okay. I hope to know more in about an hour because. Mr. Buono, the head of the Dormitory Authority, they were doing the planning and design and funding the state sheriff. Mr. Hennessy, my boss, have been in Washington today trying to get an update on funding.
Right.
Sure.
Mr. Allwell has a question. Bill Allwell. Rick, you have a question?
Yeah, I did.
Go ahead. Sorry, Bill.
Mr. Brown, I actually have two questions. The first question is, you made as part of your opening statement a comment that the population in most veterans' long-term nursing homes was male because most of the veterans from World War II in Korea were male. With the Vietnam veterans and since, that's changing. And my question is, in a sense, it breaks out into two ways. Are there any known any sex differences within the geriatric population between males and females? And if so, what particular planning for the future are you making to provide nursing home care services for the female veterans?
I don't know if I can answer your first question, but I know I can answer your second. We don't know what differences there are. The population that we've been exposed to so far, we have women veterans in each of our homes, several, but not many. Not because they're not, not because we try to keep them out, but because there have been few applying, and we do try to market our services fairly widely. We do design for men and women veterans. You know that probably at the St. Albans facility we have the Women's Memorial Room. It's something that we have recognized in design, but we don't have enough information at this point to, we know we're going to be taking care of females because the top priority in current law is a veteran accompanied by his or her spouse. So a male veteran would be accompanied by a female spouse, even though that person might not be a veteran. Similarly, a female veteran would be accompanied by a male spouse. We have females at Oxford. We have always had females at Oxford because it was the Women's Relief Corps home that admitted women only first. So we don't have enough exposure to women veterans in our facilities or anywhere else that we know of. as a group to know if there are significant differences. But we do know that we are going to be seeing women residents. I'm not sure that satisfactorily answers your question, but that's what we know.
And let me move on to my next question. I have been asking all afternoon if people are particularly aware of differences between the needs of an older veteran versus the need of the general needs of the older population. It is also, and it's just, people aren't too sure, it's also very questionable as to whether or not we are going to be able to adequately provide veterans nursing home care services with new veterans nursing home for the population in the next 10 or 15 years. So my question to you is there any reason to believe that we could not take nursing home care monies for veterans and allow a veteran to use that funding to purchase and be provided with nursing home care services in a regular nursing home through some form of set-asides?
I'm not sure I can answer that question either, but veterans who apply to and who are admitted to our facilities apply voluntarily and must pay for care. That was a decision that was made legislatively probably 20 years ago, that all state health department facilities, including at the time the Oxford home, would be essentially financially self-sufficient. Patients or residents would pay for care. So those people who are paying for their care at Oxford, St. Albans, Batavia, Stony Brook, could pay for care with that same money at the nursing home down the street.
No, I don't think so. In part, any veterans fund, I don't think would be available to them except through the nursing home, and that's a very significant.
The two differences would be you can get a higher level of aid and attendance in a state veterans home, and you get the per diem for the state home per diem. Those are federal questions. Those are federal entitlements that the states have no control over. So that would be up, again, if the federal government decides to put those funds within a block grant, then that would be up to the veteran. If not, then that would be something that would require federal legislative action.
Go ahead, Rick.
A request and a question. The request is, Don, that you provide to the council through President DeMarco a breakdown of how many veterans do you have and how many disabled veterans in each of the four homes by grade level and by profession, in other words, LPN, RN, et cetera, et cetera. That would be helpful to meet some of the needs, I think, that some folks expressed here today. Secondly, is a question on, you clearly have thought very hard, long and hard, about planning for the state veterans home based on the predominance of males within the population in the past. And my guess is did some kind of a literature review and or consulted various and sundry studies in order to come up with that. Have you attempted such a literature review and or analysis of your population to determine, are there in fact problems that those individuals have that within your homes that are related back to the military service? I'm not talking about the affinity that we fought and won the Second World War together. I'm talking about related combat, exposure on a combat scale.
There has been, when we design a new home, have, for the last three homes, hired a gerontological consultant through the architects as part of the design. To backtrack, the way we design a home is the first thing we do is design a functional program. That's what is the home going to do? What are the people in the home going to be doing day to day, the residents? How are they going to eat? Are they going to go somewhere to eat, or is food going to be brought to them? What kind of activities are they going to have? Are they going to go outside the home? And to do that, we have to know what kind of residents are coming in. Our gerontologic consultants do literature searches, as you pointed out, and we look at issues like that, but I don't think, in going back and thinking about what we've reviewed, what I've reviewed, based on the consultants' recommendations, I don't think there's been a lot of research done in that area. So I think the answer is, unless I'm mistaken, no, there hasn't been much in that area, because we don't have the funds in designing an individual home to sponsor a large-scale study on healthcare of veterans. We have enough money to do the design. These are very tightly constrained budgets. So we try to look at things that the veterans, Federal Departments of Veterans Affairs and other gerontologic researchers have already done. And we do some individual demographic analysis for the region, but we don't sponsor individual studies.
I see.
Thank you.
We thank you, sir.
Mr. Brown.
Thank you. We now have Mr. Walter Hofer, the director of the New York State Department of Aging. Sir, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. All right, good afternoon to the council members, panelists, ladies and gentlemen, President DeMarco. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today to discuss how the New York State Office for the Aging serves veterans. I'd like to start my presentation with a brief overview of the State Office for the Aging. We're known as SOFA. Those of you who are familiar with government know that acronyms are very famous in government. We have our share of them in SOFA. That's the one we use for State Office for the Aging. And we were established back in 1961 to administer federal Older Americans Act programs. In addition, we now administer state-funded programs that enhance the aging network's ability to provide a comprehensive package of non-medical services to New York's elderly population. In carrying out our responsibilities, SOFA's primary emphasis is on the development of long-term care policies and service delivery systems that contain costs while affording the full range of services necessary to meet the long-term care needs of elderly New Yorkers. To achieve this goal, we have put into place a service delivery system that ensures quality services are available to New York's elderly, especially those who are frail, dependent, and in greatest social or economic need, with particular attention to low-income minority elderly. Before I discuss the points you had asked me to concentrate on, I would like to point out that the State Office for the Aging has worked closely in recent years with the New York State Division of Veterans Affairs in a number of areas. In past years, they have invited SOFA to participate in seminars conducted around the state. Recently, I had the pleasure of having the Director of Veterans Affairs, John Behan, on my Aging and You television program that'll be distributed in March. And he indicated that they were preparing to embark on a new series of seminars.